Welcome to Alaska's Native Voice from the Carlson Center in Fairbanks. I'm your host, Antonia Gonzalez. We are our ancestors, learning from those who came before us and those to come after us. That was the theme of this year's annual gathering of Alaska Native elders and youth. For 2.5 days, hundreds of people from across the state learned from one another. They shared ideas and looked to culture, language, identity, and traditional knowledge to address some of the issues facing their communities today. What does being a modern ancestor mean? And what lessons are being passed on to future generations? We're talking about being a modern ancestor after this news update.
Reporting from the Alaska Federation of Natives Conference in Fairbanks, Alaska, I'm Sarah Gonzalez. Wednesday, tribal delegates and community members gathered to discuss issues and priorities at the joint AFN National Congress of American Indians Conference. This meeting was in advance of the official AFN conference, which got underway today at the Carlson Center. The theme of Wednesday's conference was Achieve the Achievable, with hunting and fishing rights again the major topic of discussion as in years past. AFN President Julie Kitka reviewed the work she was doing to further goals for better subsistence management, with or without federal support.
We also have an area of things that we can do ourselves to improve things and make things better, use our own resources, use our own leadership, use our own manpower, and our own brains to do, and we're going forward with that in two ways. One, we're trying to get some federal authority and some federal resources to back it up, but we're also setting it up that if we're not able to get the federal authority, that we can just do it ourselves.
Kitka described an intertribal fish commission demonstration plan currently underway that seeks to prove to the government that tribes can successfully oversee subsistence on their own lands. This smaller conference presented mostly rural attendees with a chance to speak directly to state and national representatives about the issues of most concern to them. People like Mary Sattler from Bethel addressed both state and national representatives with concerns about successfully communicating the needs of rural Alaskans.
One of the things that works against us in rural Alaska is we come from very small, isolated places where we don't really have networking capability. And this kind of a gathering gives us the same numbers as, say, Fairbanks or even, you know, maybe even close to what the Matsu Valley has in terms of a base or a group voice.
Strength in numbers, an idea of importance as voting rights were discussed. Natasha Singh of Stevens Village is an attorney with the Tanana Chiefs Conference. She says protecting the voting rights of Alaska Natives and a larger voter turnout are essential to improving major areas of concern like health, education, and hunting and fishing rights.
Without the elected officials knowing we have voting power, they will not listen to us. You have to elect candidates that represent your interests, especially in Alaska Native subsistence needs.
Also brought to the national table was a comment regarding increased federal funding for Alaska's Village Public Safety Officer Program. Sergeant Jody Potts is a VPSO coordinator. She sees her role as the first line of defense against many of the ills that plague rural Alaska villages.
And so just having VPSO presence, they're able to address domestic violence as it happens. You know, they're able to address the importation of alcohol into a dry village. And, you know, any time that alcohol is intercepted by a law enforcement officer, being troopers or VPSOs, that's one less act of violent crime in the community. One more child that doesn't have to seek violence or experience it, and they can go and learn at school.
In the afternoon, attendees addressed a panel of representatives and commissioners from Governor Sean Parnell's office, expressing their concern over state spending on road to resource projects, food security issues, the high rates of unemployment in the villages, and the lack of funding towards rural education needs. Second Chief Edward Alexander of Fort Yukon urged the panel of governor's representatives to choose respect for the rights and sovereignty of Alaska Native tribes.
You know, it's time for the governor to choose respect for our tribes and for our courts and respecting the people out in our areas.
These issues and more will be discussed at greater length as the Alaska Federation of Natives Conference continues through Saturday, October 26th. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Sarah Gonzalez.
AFN newscasts produced by Quahonic Broadcast Corporation. Major funding provided by the Siri Foundation, ConocoPhillips, South Central Foundation, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, Donlin Gold, the Pebble Partnership, the Rasmussen Foundation, Jalista Corporation, and Manilik Association. You can help the broadcast by taking the AFN listener survey at knba.org. This is a production of KNBA, Quahonic Broadcast Corporation, and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Alaska's Native Voice. I'm your host, Antonia Gonzalez. Leadership, wellness, and culture, along with storytelling and idea sharing, those are just some of the many things elders and youth from across the state focused on this week here in Fairbanks. Our guests today took part in the 30th annual gathering of the Elders and Youth Conference. It's hosted by First Alaskans Institute. Attendees celebrated their successes and examined some of the tough issues facing their communities today. And joining me now to talk about the 2013 event is Valerie Davidson and Sven Hawkinson. Both are board members of First Alaskans Institute. Welcome to Alaska's Native Voice.
Koyetna.
Well, Sven, I'll start with you. Please introduce yourself.
Chamaya, everybody. My name is Sven Hawkinson. I am now an associate professor at the University of Washington in anthropology and a curator at the Burke Museum.
And Valerie?
Good morning. My Yupik names are Nuhagaluk and Mishamaganan. My English name is Valerie Davidson, and I work at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
Well, thank you both for joining us today. And Sven, tell us one thing you took away from elders and youth.
One thing? How many things? For me, just listening to the elders, you know, all the values that they talked about between respect, advice, and wisdom, learning from our ancestors, the stories they shared with the men's circle and the storytelling. And it was, for me, it was wonderful to hear the elder men sharing these stories where it sounds like we're not doing enough of that.
And Valerie, what about for you?
I thought the most powerful part of the meeting was hearing from young people who had incredible courage to get up on the stage in front of literally thousands of people and have really tough conversations about what they're seeing and what they're experiencing in their home communities. And really challenging elders and people in their communities to be people who are worthy of respect because they set the example for the young people. And it was really a message of practice what you preach. And if you want us to be respectful in the community and if you want to contribute, you have a part in showing us how to do that.
And both of you have been coming to this conference for a long time. Can you explain, Valerie, why the organization brings elders and youth together to connect annually?
So the first youth conference I attended was about 52 people. It was in 1984, I think. 84, 30 years ago, apparently, and not very good at math. And there were actually only 52 young people who came compared to today. There are thousands of people here. And really, it's a recognition of how we have interacted, young people have interacted with elders since time immemorial. And that there is this very intentional transition of information and ways of being between elders and young people. And having the elders and youth conference together at the same time while having opportunities for them to interact, but also having opportunities for young people to have their own time, elders to have their own time, men and women to be able to interact together, and then also opportunities for them to have their own time is really an incredible way of inspiring real conversations that need to happen.
And Sven, do you have something to add to what Valerie just said?
I wish I could add more to it, but just watching how the interaction has been going on for years, it is a wonderful platform for allowing the youth and the elders across the state to gather, to see how important it is to be able to not just be able to have access to your elders, but be able to listen to them, and then also have the elders have access to our future and share their knowledge. And for me, this conference here, this last conference with elders and youth, it started to move in that direction, and it's starting to happen now.
And I think it also gives young people an opportunity to practice leadership skills.
Yes.
I think sometimes we call young people their future leaders or their emerging leaders, but really they're leaders of another generation. I mean, the people who are attending this meeting are already leaders in their community. They're just leaders of a different generation. And just in the groups that I participated in yesterday, I mean, seeing young people, a young lady who was 16 years old, who did a masterful job of facilitating a small group discussion, and she was incredible.
Well, this year's theme was looking at ancestors, and we are our ancestors was the theme. And we got a chance to go around and talk to attendees, both elder and youth, and the different generations. And we have Elizabeth Medicine Crow, who is the president and CEO of First Alaskans Institute. So I had a chance to talk with her for a little bit, so let's hear what she has to say.
I'm Haida. My family's from Haida Gwaii, and my nan told me the story of how the hummingbird became our crest. And one of my ancestors long ago was out fishing, and he got caught up in a storm, and he was way out. And Haida Gwaii is out there on the ocean, and the canoe swamped, and he was trying to stay afloat and swim, but the storm was too bad, the waves were too rough, and he realized he was drowning. He was not going to make it. And just as his head started to slip beneath the surface of the water, something whizzed by his face, and he came back up one last kick and took another breath, and it whizzed by his face again, and it was a hummingbird. And every time he was just about to slip into the water, that hummingbird whizzed by him, and he just started to follow that hummingbird until he touched back on ground and came up on the beach. And I've always wondered, for him, for that ancestor, that moment when he had decided all hope was lost and that he was just resigning himself to his fate, that he opened himself up to this other being, this precious being, to help him and guide him back to land. Like, what was going through his mind, like, at that moment? And then the switch, what was that switch? We need that switch today. And we need all of our people to know how to turn that switch on, so that no matter what they encounter, no matter what turbulence they encounter or bum weather they encounter, they know that it's just a storm and a season and it will pass. And they know how to turn that switch on so they can resolve themselves to move through it. I feel a tremendous amount of responsibility for making sure that what we have doesn't dissipate, but in fact is affirmed and strengthened. And I want our future ancestors to look back on us and say, we are upholding the values of our ancestors, and that they can't distinguish us from a long line of people who have kept us alive, no matter the harsh circumstance that we have encountered, and that we all become part of that ancestral collective knowledge and that deep wellspring that keeps our passions stoked today. I would hate to be part of the generation that allowed slippage to occur, that didn't fight as hard as I should have, that didn't care enough about my relatives as I should have, that I didn't love other Native and Indigenous people enough or our cultures enough to try to at least make it better, make it stronger, add to it. And I think that's the nightmare coupled with the solution. I hope that our young people in the future still know who they are, love who they are perpetuating who they are, and not just copying what their ancestors, us, or those before us, have done. Like Oscar Quigley said, if all you're doing is copying, something that your people did long ago, then you're practicing a dead art. You have a responsibility to add to it. What will they add to us in the future? What will we look like? What will our dancing, our expression, what will our language sound like? All those things, I hope for them. And I'm going to do my best to be part of making sure that it's available for them.
And that was Elizabeth Medicine Crow, the leader of First Alaskans Institute. And today on Alaska's Native Voice, we're talking about the Elders and Youth Conference that was held earlier in the week, Monday through Wednesday, where elders and youth from across the state gathered here in Fairbanks. And I have a couple guests joining us to talk about this. And Sven, you're over there shaking your head, listening to Elizabeth's beautiful words. What was going through your mind?
Just listening to the wisdom of what Liz is saying, and also just how she's looking at it. I love her vision of what can we add now to our future. Let's not live in the past. Let's learn from the past and move forward. Again, the whole theme, we are our ancestors. It's important to have that foundation, but to move forward. And it's wonderful and beautiful to hear what Liz just said and share that, so that we are asking ourselves individually, what are we adding? What are we building on towards our future, so that we can have a place where our songs are sung again? You know, the dance is celebrated in every community.
And Valerie, what about you?
Well, obviously, we're very fortunate to have Liz be our president, CEO, because, I mean, she really sets the tone for the organization and for this conference every year. She has an incredible team. And the thing that I appreciate most is that the conference really is a reflection of who we are as people, and there is a very intentional team approach to making things happen and celebrating successes. And no matter how challenging and how exhausting it all is, there's a commitment to be good to each other and to show incredible respect and love with each other.
And part of the conference, there are keynote speakers, both a youth keynote and an elder speaker. And Larry Sherkazin, Aleut elder, was the keynote speaker this year. Let's hear what he had to say.
My message was that be prepared. You know, looking back, I was lucky to have parents and uncles and aunts that taught me to be that way. Is the way that we were raised. You know, in the winter, if you didn't prepare yourself, subsistence food, you starved. I had a lot of respect for my ancestors. And they taught me that we are as good as anybody else in the world. And that I don't have to be ashamed of the fact that I'm Native, that I'm my ancestors are Native. And that I could carry my head proudly, just like anybody else. And I had to learn that the hard way, being a young man from a Native village in the lower 48 in the United States, and coming from a little village. And I had to learn that I was as good as anybody else, and that I could be as good as anybody else with some work. But I always be aware that there are people that are going to depend on you to be the best that you can be, and that you are going to be judged by your behavior, in the way you conduct yourself in the other person's world.
And that was the keynote speaker, the elder keynote speaker, Larry Sherkazin, talking about be prepared. So Valerie, what does that mean to you, to be prepared?
I think being prepared is, being aware, for definitely. Being able to look at what's going on around you and using the skills that our ancestors gave us in terms of observation and being able to react quickly to what's happening around you. And just play out what are the possibilities of any possible scenario. And I think the elders circle and the young people circle and then the women's circle and the men's circle, it was really fascinating to watch during the women's circle having the conversations of sharing that traditional knowledge, and then the young people injecting things from their generation that helped to complement what the elders were saying. And there was an appreciation there from the elders for what the young people could contribute that I thought was really empowering for the young people who were able to participate. And we need more of that, because they need to know that they are smart and that they are capable and that they are strong.
And Sven, Larry said that people are going to be watching you, so you have to, you know, be aware of what you're doing. And what does that mean to you?
To be aware, but also being watching. But watching you is watching what you do. And when we had the elders gathering, we were talking about what does it mean to be a good elder. And what it all boiled down to after an hour of visiting is one of the elders said, it means to be a teacher. To be aware, but to be a teacher so that you can teach. What Valerie said of our children, our future, becoming aware, but also preparing them for what they are going to be facing in life. Giving them the wisdom on how to weather the storms that life will give you. How to get through, you know, the challenges when you have with your spouse or the challenges you have with your children. And then weathering through those, because those storms do pass. And giving them that wisdom so they know how to be able to do that.
And part of the conference is addressing some of the challenges, suicide, bullying, yeah. Health, also being a leader. And so education is something we talked to some of the younger students about. And we did speak to Ms. Weo, who is Megan Leary. She's the 2013 Miss Weo, and her platform was education. So when she goes around talking to youth, that's what she encourages them to do. So let's hear what she has to say about education.
Well, honestly, I had tried to drop out when I was 15, and if it wasn't for my mom, and she, you know, she just told me, you're not going to drop out. That'll be the worst decision you ever make in your life, you know. And she asked me, what are you going to do, Megan? What are you going to do if you dropped out? And a lot of times, the kids in the villages, there's nobody there to ask them, what do you want to be? Where do you want to go? What do you want to see? And so I just, you know, I stuck to it, and I realized, you know, yeah, that I've to have a job to, you know, buy a snow machine or to have gas to go hunting, I'm going to need money. But to have money, I'm going to need an education to get a job. And, you know, I thought too, like, oh, I'm not going to be, you know, I come from a little tiny town and I don't need a college degree. But when I thought about the things I wanted to be and where I wanted to go in life, you know, I realized I'm going to need a diploma. And I always wanted to help people. So I just kind of like picked a degree that, you know, rural development. I can live in my region. I can live in my village and I can have a job where I'm going to help the people in my community. I'm going to help my village. And so it was just the goals that I had that I set out for myself, you know, that I guess kind of decided what me finishing school and going on to college. Where I stand today is because of what, you know, my grandma, my great-grandma, my great-great-grandma, my great-great-great, you know, everything, all my ancestors, what they did and all their struggles and what they worked so hard for in their life, it got me to where I am today. And, you know, how hard I work and what I do, the footprints I leave in this life, you know, they're going to be for my kids and my grandkids. It's a really powerful message if you really think about it. And, you know, think about everything that you do and who you are as a person is going to reflect on your family now and later.
And Megan, the Miss Weo 2013, Megan Leary talking about education. And I relate to her because my family was saying, go to school, get an education. Those are your options. There's nothing else. That's what you're doing. You're going to finish school. So Valerie, for you, how did you draw on your values from your community during your education?
Well, I think for many of us, we're the first people in our family to ever go to college at all, much less graduate school or become a PhD like Sven. And I think that, you know, for my mother taught me there's no such thing as can't. And I think children become what we reinforce. And sometimes I worry that there's so much emphasis in the media and sort of everywhere kids look, it's about what they look like and it's about what they wear. And they hear all the time from a very young age, oh, little girl, you're so cute. And oh, little boy, you're so cute. You're so handsome. And who's telling them, look at you. You are so smart. You're really capable. You're smart. And kids need to know every moment of every single day that they are smart and they are capable of doing incredible things. I know when I went to graduate school, I'll be honest, I was a 28-year-old grown woman I went to Albuquerque for graduate school, and I cried like a baby every single month because I was incredibly homesick. And it got easier, but if I didn't have the support of my family telling me, you can do this, there's no such thing as can't, and remember, you are smart, you can do this, and there are people who are counting on you to come back and to give back to the community, then people will be successful. But I think it's not just about encouraging people to go to higher education. We also need to take the next step and remind them to come back home.
And Sven?
Oh, boy. I get just drawing on family, but also knowing that when you succeed, you're succeeding for your community. You know, I had never planned on going to... I planned on going to college, but I never planned on going to graduate school. And I knew that the odds were against me of even graduating. But I had individuals who pushed me, said, you can do this because I know you can. And I had faith in... Or they had faith in me, and that gave me faith in myself. And I struggled with wanting to quit, wanting to just drop out, wanting to come home, wanting to just become a fisherman. And that's what I had planned on doing when I was an undergraduate. I was going to get done with my undergraduate degree and become a fisherman and teacher. And then I had two professors, Lydia Black and Perry Gilmore, said, you need to apply to graduate school. I thought they're going to look at my application and laugh. I didn't expect to get a full ride, full scholarship from Harvard. And so having people at that right time saying, you need to apply, and believing them made all the difference in my life. It completely changed my life forever. And those are things that all come back to what we're talking about, the power of words, giving our future, giving our youth the knowledge and the faith and the belief in themselves so they can go to that next level.
And, oh, go ahead.
So I have a daughter who's 12 now. Her name is Kylie Nagel. My younger daughter is Alana. And when Kylie was 5, I asked her, what are you good at? And she responded, I'm really good at being smart. And every Alaska Native and American Indian should be able to say that, mm-hmm. should be able to say it and believe it. And yeah. we have to make sure that they do.
Yeah. My daughter's only 7 and 10, and they expect to go to college.
Well, good. Well, that I'm sure that they'll follow in your footsteps, both of you. Well, today you're listening to Alaska's Native Voice, and we're talking about the Elders and Youth Conference that wrapped up yesterday afternoon. We have two guests joining us today, and we also went around and talked to various attendees for the 2.5 days. We got to take a short break, but we'll be right back. Welcome back to Alaska's Native Voice. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Today we're talking about the 2013 Elders and Youth Conference, and it was held Monday through Wednesday afternoon. It wrapped up yesterday afternoon here at the Carlson Center. And joining us to talk about the gathering is Sven Hawkinson and Valerie Davidson. Thank you for joining us today to talk about this conference.
Thank you, Juliana.
And so we've heard a little bit about some of the attendees, and we have some more to get to because there's just so many things that go on language, culture, addressing these issues, and just spending time together and seeing people, friends and relatives that you don't see all the time. So Valerie, what do you see that you want to pass on to the next generation?
I think young people really need to believe in themselves, and their voice is way more powerful than they even know. I mean, hearing the panel yesterday, the young people from Tanana and the young lady, Devin, who was up there talking about some really difficult things, she said things that would not have been heard if anyone else had said them. And I think that young people telling the story of their own experience in their own words is such an incredibly genuine story that reaches and touches people and affects people in ways that nobody else can. And the great thing about young people is they tell the truth, and they tell hard, brutal, honest truth. And if a young person says something like that, I mean, you cannot help but ask yourself, how did we arrive at this situation? What good can we make of the situation, and how can we turn things around so that other children have a better experience? Or if they're describing a good experience, how do we help other children have the same good experience?
And along with the youth speaker that got on the podium and others, other speakers that were up there sharing these tough issues and different conversations going on the floor and different rooms, something that was going around being discussed among the youth was also holding the adults accountable and the community accountable. Like this person, this young woman was talking about being in foster care and facing abuse. And so Sven, your response to keeping adults and the community responsible.
It starts with each of us. Each of us is responsible for not just our actions, but also for what we see happening. And being able to say, wait a minute, something's not right. And being able to sit down and talk with that youth or talk with that elder. I mean, there's elder abuse too. And so it goes both ways. And sadly, it's something that we don't talk about much in, is elder abuse. But the power, listening to Devin, I mean, she brought tears to my eyes, not only for her ability to get up there and to share her story, but to have her share her story so that she's sharing it so she can move on. She's not holding herself back. And, you know, then that comes back to us, and our responsibility is not just adults, but as elders. So we can start building healthier communities. Let's break those things that we've fallen into for the last two centuries, and break them so that we can move forward, so we can build a more beautiful future for ourselves and our children and a place to live. I mean, Alaska is just beautiful, period. We need to do that more within our communities, with each other, with ourselves, so that we can have that again.
And you hear a lot during Elders and Youth that the talking and the discussion is about healing. And also using your culture, your language, traditional values as part of the healing process. And I got a chance to speak to one of the members of a dance group. His name was Joel Forbes, and he's Yupik. And he talked about how it made him feel when he was dancing, and just shared a little bit about the dance troupe as well. So let's hear what he had to say.
This dance group was started in the 90s by students attending UAF and wanting to continue dancing while going to school, and it's called Inuyupak. It's a combination of Inupak and Yupik, Yupak, and we dance both Inupak and Yupik songs. It's a group built of people from all over the place, so we learn songs from whoever is in the group, and they're, you know, willing to share songs from where they're from. I first learned when I was in kindergarten. They had all the kindergarten students learn how to dance. But after that, it's your choice to join the dance group that, you know, is part of the community. And I had never joined until high school. And I just loved it and wanted to keep up. It makes me feel like I'm helping, you know, keep something alive.
And that was Joel from one of the dance groups. There's part of the Elders and Youth Conference is the daily cultural presentations. And it's not just during those times. It's culture and language is infused and traditional values is infused throughout the day, all day long. So Valerie, when you hear music and you hear the language and the dancing, and also part of healing, what goes through your mind?
I think every time we hear traditional music, there's kind of a recognition and an awakening that happens in young people and old people, and I guess even us middle of the roaders. And I think that people draw upon their strength when they need it the most. I mean, you may have a song or something that touches you in a way that will help you get through the darkest times. And I guess one of the things, a message that I'd like young people to hear is that keeping things quiet when things shouldn't happen. I mean, abuse is not a part of our culture. It is not about our tradition. It is not a part of our tradition. And unfortunately, those terrible things that can happen in families and in communities thrive in secrecy, and they thrive in the dark. And it is really important for people to start talking about things that are happening and to tell somebody that you know and to tell somebody that you trust, because you may be able to stop something that is going to happen to somebody else. And even if you're not willing to do it for yourself, do it for somebody else who comes behind you, because we have to be able to shed light and show examples of who we really can be as people. And there are people who will help you to do that. And those kinds of things should no longer thrive in secrecy and no longer thrive in the dark.
And Sven, what about this idea that talking about infusing the language and the culture throughout the conferences, you hear people getting up there and you have young MCs, mm-hmm. and they're told by the staff and others in the conference that it's okay to mess up. Mm-hmm. It's okay if you don't pronounce something wrong, it's okay.
Yep.
We want you to try. We want you to do your tradition, your language, just try it out. And so I think that helps kind of take off some edge, Sven.
Well, it takes off the edge, but it also just empowers them to be able to learn, to be able to speak up for not only themselves, but their community. And yes, mistakes are all part of life, but you learn from them and you grow from them. And that's what's important, is get up there, make mistakes, but laugh, enjoy yourself, and move forward. Don't hold yourself back because of that.
And being able to do it in a circle of people is really a lot easier than having to be the only person who is. There was a lady, one of the best things I heard was a lady who came out, and she's probably in her 50s. And I said, well, how did it go? And she said, I had so much fun. I didn't understand a word that was said, but it sure was fun. I mean, that's culture and that's tradition.
Yeah.
And also adapting to a world that is changing and an outside world and outside influences. I heard discussions about, well, I still practice hunting and fishing, and just because I don't do it with a spear, I may do it with a gun. It's still traditional. It's just the use of adapting to a changing world. And mm-hmm. so I did talk to an artist who... Rico Worrell, who is Tlingit and Athabascan, part of the Elders and Youth Conference, is the Arts and Ops, which people have booths back there. So we went back there and talked to some of the people set up back there. So let's hear what Rico had to say.
In Tlingit, we have a word called Hashagun. It sort of translates to the connection between the past, present, and the future. For me, it's really about learning from our past and bringing that past forward with us as we go into the future. My goal with Trickster Company is really to make an accessible route for people to culture. Our youth are learning in new ways nowadays, so there's a lot of influences from media to the products they engage in, and so I try to make products that they engage in, but that come from their own people. One thing that you'll hear a lot of is you have to learn your language or you have to learn the stories, and it's a huge undertaking if you think about it. You got to learn about 10,000 years of history, and it's intimidating. So I try to encourage people just to take one step. Like, if you're interested in skateboarding, have a skateboard with your design on it, with your crest, and maybe then you could talk about that crest with your family. And I think art is a great bridge. It leads into culture. So I have this bracelet, and it's got the Starship Enterprise D from Star Trek The Next Generation, and it's the first in a series that I'm creating of bracelets which speak to sort of using traditional materials, traditional techniques, but having contemporary contexts. Star Trek is something that speaks about technology and the future, really, and you know, it goes back to Hashigun, connecting the past, the present, and the future. It talks about things that people talk about today. Okay, maybe it's some of us more nerdy people that are talking about Star Trek, but you know, still, it's a popular TV show. So,
so Sven, are you a Star Trek?
Yeah.
As Rico put it, I won't say it, but Rico says Star Trek nerd.
Trekkie, yeah.
So, what is your take from what he said?
I think it's absolutely wonderful because it puts Tlingit culture and links it into modern day culture, modern day pop culture, modern day whatever you want to call it, TV that actually influences us across the world. And so that's a wonderful way of combining, you know, what we see in our youth now and our past. And that's building towards this other more beautiful culture, you know, that's thriving and living and being used today. So to combine Star Trek into Tlingit art is absolutely wonderful. Now I want to go see his art.
Well, he had skateboards, a longboard, mm-hmm. jewelry, and then playing cards. He has some playing cards, and they all have his designs on there.
Yeah.
And he has playing cards that are in the Tlingit language. Yeah.
And we bought some. Mm-hmm. Yes, 2 days ago.
Oh, okay, great, awesome. And did you have anything to add to what Rico was saying, Valerie?
I think whether it's art or any other, whether it's art or fishing or hunting or gathering, I think Alaska Native people have always been really gifted at being able to take advantage of modern advances, whatever they might be, to be able to integrate into traditional culture and values, to really reflect who they are today and who they might be in the future. But it's a recognition and it's an honoring of the past. It's bridging that gap to where people are now. And the funny thing is it's also serving as a springboard for people who will come after us.
Yes.
That it thinks they're going to be, kid, young people are going to be living in a totally different world when they're our age.
Yeah.
And just the use of technology and the changing technology. And I'm sure in your work, you see, have you ever come across, you're like, oh, wow, this is something that's still being done today?
Oh, in terms of, well, I mean, like looking at hunting. I mean, it's like no matter where you go across Alaska, it doesn't matter whether you have a gun or fancy equipment. All that knowledge that those people, all the men and women have passed on, goes back thousands of years. Every community has it. And every child that's in that village, you can ask them, where do I go get berries? And they'll be like, well, you go over here. My grandma goes over here, but you can't go over here. Or where do you go fishing? We go down here. Now, what time of the year? They'll tell you, oh, that's for, you know, the fresh fish versus the fish in the stream, you know, versus the dry fish. So, I mean, every child, even now, is taught that. And you go into the villages, that's where you can go and ask. You'll find a lot of information there.
Well, we also got a chance to talk to Marjorie Tabone from Nome, Alaska, and she was talking about her tattoo. So let's hear what she had to say about this.
Once we had contact, that tradition of having a tattoo was stripped away from us, and we haven't seen it for a very long time. And now we're bringing it back, and and I got my traditional tattoo and kind of translated it into modern settings. So where right now it wouldn't be appropriate for some women to get married when they're 13 years old, when they get their first menstruation period, I got mine after I graduated college, when I got my degree and diploma, saying that, okay, I can live out in the society, I can get a job, I can provide for my community. If I have a family, I can support them. And so that's how I translated it into modern setting. And my whole family was there to support me. I asked my grandmother, my mother, and they all thought that it was right for me to get the tattoo. And not every woman decides to get a tattoo, and that's totally fine, but that's just who I identify myself with, as a Inupiaq woman who is ready for to provide for my community. So a long time ago, it was done in many different ways, and I'll talk about the way that it was done where I'm from. And where I'm from is from the Bering Strait region, the Norton Sound region of Alaska, which is in the northwestern side of Alaska. And they used a needle and sinew, which is like a thread, and they would dip the thread in a mixture of ash or soot, and it either could be, and I've heard several different ways, they would make a mixture of soot and seal oil. I've heard soot and urine, and then they would string that needle and sinew through their chin multiple times until they got a straight line throughout their chin. And that was the method that was done long time ago, because that's what they had. And so now I hear people still do it that way, the old way, but the method that's usually done now is with a tattoo gun, because it's more efficient and safer as far as infection. From where my family's from Wales, the women get an initial tattoo once they get their menstruation cycle, or when they're ready to get a tattoo, when they're ready to be married. And that is one solid line down the center and two smaller lines next to it. And that's the initial tattoo. Once the lady grows up and becomes a mother, a wife, and a grandmother, they'll get more tattoos. And it kind of symbolizes their status as this woman of knowledge and wisdom. And so mine is an initial tattoo of one solid line down the middle and two on the sides. I've seen places where they had one solid line and dots, and it just depends on where you're from. As the initial tattoo is on the chin, and like, for example, I got mine, and when I get married and have kids, I'm going to get tattoos on my hands and wrists. It hurt right under the lip, right where the pigment starts to change color. That's or at the end of the tattoo, man, that part really hurt, but it felt good. It was a good hurt. I would say it was a good pain, because I knew that I had the support of my ancestors with me, and my family was right there, and I knew that if I moved, I would make it look ugly.
And that was Marjorie Tawbone from Nome, Alaska, talking about a tattoo and how she was just talking basically about her community, explaining how she's seen it differently in different communities, and the way that it was done was modern, using a tattoo gun. So, Valerie, your take on what Marjorie had to say.
I think there are a lot of adaptations that to modern situations that keep culture alive. For example, in the region that I'm from, on the coast in the Bethel area, etc., we still practice throwing parties, or uqiquq, which is when, traditionally it was when a young man caught his first big game, or when a young lady picked their first berries. They would have a feast for the whole community, and then you would gather everything from thread and needle to all kinds of household items, and the women participated. And the family who had the success would throw these things from a rooftop or from a high spot for all of the ladies to be able to catch. And if you look at what happens today, for example, recently my aunt, a couple of years ago, had an uqiquq here in Fairbanks for her daughter who finished a master's program. And it's really a recognition of a traditional activity, celebrating in ways that are meaningful to us, but celebrating new rites of passage for young people.
And Spin?
Well, and the wonderful thing that's happening in Kodiak is they're doing more, I guess, just celebrating with dances. and mass carving. And so that process is coming back. And what's wonderful about that is they're using historical accounts to learn from what we lost, because in our area, unlike the Lucky Yupik, a lot of that knowledge disappeared within 20 years of contact. And so using historical accounts to bring that information back, to share it with our community and put it back into a living context where it's celebrated again. And then also, you know, like talking with Valerie, did we have those? And then how do we find that there? And then what are the proper protocols for doing it appropriately and respectfully, but also adapting it to a modern day context?
Well, that's a lot to take away from and a lot to look at, but there's so much information that's shared during the week, and we heard from the elder keynote earlier in the program, so we're going to hear from the youth keynote. He's also Yupik. He's Nelson Kainuk, and let's hear what he had to say.
Don't stop learning here. The learning keeps going farther and farther with you, further into your life. Even when you're an elder, I'm sure you all still learn something every day that you get to use, you know, in your everyday life. So with that, get all the knowledge you can while you're here. Keep it. But share it also, because it's important for us to learn, and it's important for us to work with other youth. And to get them to get again with that intergenerational connection with the elders in your community. Because together, you are very powerful people.
And that was the youth keynote who spoke this week. And he's saying, keep learning, take the knowledge, and share it. So, Valerie, I'll start with you.
So, he's from Qipnak, which is a very traditional community in the southwest region of Alaska on the coast. My brother happens to live there. He married a wonderful young woman in the fine Yupik tradition. When a young man and young woman meet and marry, he moves and completely uproots himself and moves to his wife's home village. And so the Gunlik family has really embraced him in that community. For which our family will be forever grateful. But kids there in that community are so lucky because they speak Yupik as their first language, and they really have a lot of everyday interaction with elders in their community. And so it's interesting when you see what happens there in a lot of traditional, like other traditional communities, the interaction can be really subtle, but it can also be really intentional. So it happens subtly on a daily basis because they're there. It's a community that's isolated, and they interact with each other constantly. And you may have several generations living in one home. And so that happens naturally as just a part of living in that community. But they also have events in the community where those activities are a lot more intentional and a lot more structured. And I think the great thing about this information age, and I know people from Qipnak, I mean, they have a web, they have a Facebook page, and they're connected incredibly well digitally. And I think what he has shown is that you don't have to be a person who lives in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau or be from a larger community. You can have just as much of an impact, or maybe even more of an impact, because you have real village credibility if you live in a community and can contribute what you have learned from that place.
And Sven, keep learning, take the knowledge, and share it. Your take on that?
My take on that, again, it comes back to all of us. Whether we read something, whether we learn it, but being able to find those positive examples. For example, Qipnak would be a beautiful model to look at on healthy communities. How do we create healthy communities? And why? What are they doing right? And how can we take that and say, here are some examples of wonderful ways to live healthily? So keep learning. We will... After I got my PhD, what I realized is the more I learn, the less I know. And so, you know, there's so much more to learn. I mean, listening to the speeches, listening to the presenters, talking with the elders. I mean, it's like just in this last 4 days, I've learned a lot.
Well, we're already getting to the end of our program, and so I want to just give you each just a quick final thought on the 2013 Elders and Youth Conference. Valerie Davidson, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I thought it was the best conference yet, and young people are really showing everybody how it can be done, and they're doing it with love and support from the elders who are really there pushing them forward and holding them up so that they have the strength and the power to do what they need for themselves and their communities.
And I know it's this year just finished. Sven, next year's conference,
I'm looking forward to it, to just again hearing their wisdom, building on what they've learned and what they took from this conference into the whole next year, because as we've heard from the dancer, what they learn now will inspire them for the rest of their lives.
And one thing you want to leave the youth from this year to take home?
Keep learning.
And you can do anything. I mean, you're capable, you're yes. smart, you're incredibly technologically savvy, and you have a traditional base to draw from. And with that, you can do anything. You're totally unstoppable.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, Sven Hawkinson and Valerie Davidson. We were talking about the 2013 Elders and Youth Conference, which was held this week here at the Carlson Center in Fairbanks, Alaska. You've been listening to Alaska's Native Voice. I'm your host, Antonia Gonzalez. Our producer and board operator is Sarah Gustavus, and we have a couple more shows for you this week on Alaska's Native Voice. Tomorrow we'll be looking at traditional healing. We'll have a couple of doctors here. We're also talking to attendees. The Alaska Federation of Natives annual convention kicked off today, and there's expected to draw thousands of people to this annual event. So our producers will be going out and talking to people today and hearing what they have to say. They're just preparing to get back to the session here in a few minutes, but join us tomorrow. And you can find more information about First Alaskans Institute online at firstalaskans.org. Again, thank you for joining us today.
Alaska's Native Voice, produced and anchored by Antonia Gonzalez. Technical operations by Sarah Gustavus. Major funding provided by the Siri Foundation, ConocoPhillips, South Central Foundation, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, Donlin Gold, the Pebble Partnership, the Rasmussen Foundation, Jalista Corporation, and Manilik Association. You can help the broadcast by taking the AFN Listener Survey at knba.org. This is a production of KNBA, Quahonic Broadcast Corporation, and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.